Welcome to another episode of Threads of Enlightenment. We have Jamie with us. As usual at Threads, we welcome our guests and we have them introduce themselves, and then we'll go back and gather all the information, the steps that brought them to this place today. As you know in my heart that you and I are all creators, and Jamie's going to tell us the world that she has created today. And then we are going to go and learn from when she started putting those bricks together to create this vision that she has today. Jamie, welcome to Threads of Enlightenment.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
Thank you.
A little bit of background about myself. I call myself a recovering marketing executive because that's where I spent the bulk of my career until the last couple of years. So I worked my way up in the technology industry into various marketing leadership roles. In the last full-time role I had, I was running marketing and inside sales for a cybersecurity company. I had a very interesting period of time where a lot of changes were happening at once, and I embraced those changes and decided to launch my own business. So I launched a marketing consultancy where I helped small businesses get their marketing efforts off the ground. I launched a private coaching practice. So I have an executive coaching practice where I typically attract clients that have reached the stage of burnout and are looking for an alternative career path, or they'd like to launch their own businesses. So that's one of my passion areas. And I am also in the process of finishing up my first book, which is about the period of growth after a growth journey. So when you go back to the real world after you've transformed and your old life doesn't fit the same way that you used to, and how to navigate that and create the most nurturing environment so that you can continue to grow.
Well, welcome. That's a mouthful that you have. And I love the fact that you have, you're so focused on it. And we are going to go and get all the good stuff, Jamie. I want to know, let's go back before this creation took place. What type of person were you when you began to walk in your skin, as they say, and how did you recognize that you wanted to be in the corporate field as far as the IT? How did that, all of that initiate? Talk to us a little about your high school days. What type of person were you in your high school or even before that?
Yeah, so I was very, very different in high school and before that. I did not have a lot of self-confidence. I was actually bullied pretty relentlessly as a child. So in elementary school, I was I was bullied very severely and lost my voice for years. It took me a long time to step into my own skin, but I was very hesitant and fearful of a lot of things because of the environment that I had been in. And I fell into more observer roles, and I started to watch people and how they communicated. And I saw patterns, and I began to deepen my level of listening skills. It helped me be a better problem solver. It helped me increase compassion and empathy for other people. And over time, I found my confidence a little bit later in life. But those skills, when I was in observing mode, really helped me step into that space a little bit more effectively. And then I entered the space that I worked in kind of by chance. I selected marketing as my area of study when I was in college because I've always been a storyteller. My mother was an English teacher, so reading and writing stories were always things that felt familiar to me. And it worked for a very long time, that field, that space, because my superpower is being able to extract something from a mess. So when I was in marketing roles and I needed to extract the right story for the right audience, I could go into a technical setting, listen to everybody talk about the product and give me too much information. And then I could kind of weed out the stuff that didn't matter and focus in on just the message that was the most relevant to the audience that they were trying to reach. And I was good at it. So marketing felt like it fit for a very long time. And I realized later that I could apply that skill in a different way. But
yeah, marketing, I did the same thing. I used to, I would go in. I worked in healthcare at the time, and I would go in and all these meetings and stuff like that. And then I would extract the information to create a brochure or a kind of a marketing campaign on specificness of the conversation that we had. And that was so much fun because it was so creative. And this is where I tell people the difference between marketing and sales. I don't like sales at all. I just don't. But the marketing aspect of the business, I love. And that is where the creative part of it comes into play. You kind of take the all this information and then you bring it down to a place that people can enjoy. I always say from their palate that they can taste it. They can experience it from their senses and be a part of it. So that is awesome to hear that someone is a part of that as well. I love that type of stuff. So you talked about losing your voice from the bullying. And I cannot tell you the amount of people that I've interviewed that have taken a situation like that. And when they turn it from the inside and they begin to, they hide in a way, but what comes out of it is that they become a better student of observing people's behavior. And it's very fascinating to hear that you came from that same space as well. So here you are in junior high school. How did you utilize some of the skill set as you began to learn them in your high school and then you're entering into your college arena?
So I think experiences like that do a couple of things. They really strengthen your resiliency. So you're able to be a little bit more flexible. And when you're navigating things, it's not as detrimental when something doesn't go as planned because you've already started strengthening that muscle. You know, the what happened to me when I was younger, that wasn't part of the plan. That wasn't expected. But learning from it helped prime me to navigate situations that were complex in the future. The other thing that's interesting is I think it challenges you to think about problem solving in a different perspective. So, you know, depending on you know, there's so many factors that could depend on, that could impact the outcome. But in my situation, I was able to, you know, find solutions, like small solutions in new ways. And I, I feel like I unlocked this part of my brain that allowed me to be creative with problem solving. And I think, you know, you're talking about the excavating the message when you're in a marketing role, it's just really creative problem solving. And I think that that nurtured that part of my brain and allowed it to open up a little bit because I had space for it. So I didn't have any friends. And to start seeing that there were bigger things that I could try to do with my mind.
So now here you are, because this is key to the development of this individual that is you, the understanding and looking at the behavior, becoming a student, if you will, of human behavior. And as you begin to become a student of human behavior, you being a human, how did you now take that knowledge, that skill set, as you began to learn of it and began to now look at yourself to begin to use some of those tools that you saw as one that is looking into human behavior?
So it's interesting because there are a lot of good things and tools that came out of that, you know, painful experience, but it also led me down a path that I didn't want to be on. So because of these experiences, I became an overachiever and a perfectionist because I saw what it was like when you weren't accepted. And so I developed these ideas of, okay, if I want to be accepted and I want to be successful, these are the things that this is how I want to show up. And that led me through my successful corporate career because I was achieving, I was good at what I did, but it was driven from an unhelpful place and it was still driven from a place of fear. So like I gathered these tools and they served me in some ways, but they brought me all the way to the other side of the pendulum. The pendulum took me all the way to the other side. And then that also did not work. So it was a stepping stone to developing a lot of helpful skills. But then I still dug myself into a hole later in my career when I reached a place of burnout and had to reset my entire life.
Yeah, but the skill set that we learn in certain arenas are perfect. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the skill set that you learned was perfect in the arena of corporate America and business, because that is the qualities that they deem important in that particular space. And so those individuals that have those high skill set will always perform above and beyond it within that arena, because that's what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. But as you stated, the being of you, Jamie, was incomplete mm-hmm. as you began to move in and navigate your space through life and learning about yourself within the arena of business. You recognize that, wait a minute, there's something else that is missing, because I'm burning out. I'm getting to a place where my energy is low, my creativity is not there. I really don't have the desire. And that's the thing, when you come to a burnout, is that desire begins to wane. Mm-hmm. So here you are, and you are experiencing this space of burnout. Mm-hmm. You're driven, but your spiritual side, I don't want to use that word yet. This inner part of you is just not getting, I don't feel it in this arena. Now, how did you begin to say, okay, I need to, because those are the shaking of the tree that I talk about. These are the things where life comes in and interrupt our comfort, mm-hmm. trying to get us to become aware of a situation that is not beneficial to the wholeness of who we are. So now, how did you begin to, as those questions came up, how did you begin to start investigating it and answering them?
So I wouldn't say that I investigated it out of pure curiosity. My body was mm-hmm. screaming at me, and I slowly started to listen. I think that this journey happens a lot when people are forced into change. And I abruptly lost my job. The product mm-hmm. at the company that I worked at was failing, and they had to do some consolidations. And even though I was sad that this wasn't part of my plan, there was so much relief that was felt instantly. I was not sleeping. Mm-hmm. I was working around the clock. I was supporting a business that had several people across the globe, and I was working across all different time zones. I had no ability to really connect with people in my life. I was so drained that even when I was there, I wasn't really there. And mm-hmm. I had a physical ailment that was getting so bad that I had started to see medical professionals about it. And I was told right around this time that the only path forward to getting rid of this pain was two surgeries. And I was in my mid-30s with two failing hips, and it just didn't add up.
Wow.
It didn't make sense to me that somebody who is, you know, relatively young, healthy, active, had failing hips in both sides. It didn't quite add up. So this change all happened, and it kind of forced me into a quiet place with lots of space where I could go inward and think about mm-hmm. Well, who is Jamie now versus who Jamie was when she started on this path? What motivates me? What inspires me? What do I want my life to actually look like? Because it's not this. And so I really took mm-hmm. the time mm-hmm. to look inward and heal. I started making time for movement, which was something that I had crossed off the list when I got too busy. I wasn't exercising as much as I used to. So movement, journaling, meditating, all things that just had to do with me connecting to myself. And I did that for a long time. And mm-hmm. when I came out on the other side, I was not only was I almost pain-free, and I didn't end up needing the surgeries, I looked different. I felt different. Everybody in my life was like, who is this new version of you? And I'm like, this is the me that's been hiding for years. And it's always interesting, because when I hear that somebody is forced into change, like losing a job, you know, the initial response that most people think of is, oh, I'm so sorry. And I don't say that to people when I hear that they're going through a struggling period of time. I ask them how they're feeling and I make space for them, but it's often a point where it can be the impetus for growth if you follow.
It is in order for you to begin to experience who you truly are, you have to go to the dark places. Yeah. I've mentioned, I always start and tell the audience that we are creators, and they know that I'm coming from a Christian background. But when God showed up on the scene to begin to create, I read that it was darkness. It was absolutely a mess. And so when your life is absolutely a mess, that is the time I tell people to start laughing, start getting your energy together, because life has presented an opportunity for you to truly see who you are, that you are a creator. And in order to begin to create, you need some chaos, you need some darkness, you need some stuff that will make you dig deep to find out who you are and your capabilities. One of the chapters that I talked to you about in my book, Jamie, was that solitude, that place of solitude. As you go in there, that's where you get to know who you are. And that's where the power and all of the creative juice is there. Because I read that Jesus went up into the mountains, and after he came back, he started walking on water. And that's the kind of stuff that we do. We go into that little mountain of ours, and then we begin to pull from the deepness of who we are. And then we begin to create, and we begin to create by changing our thoughts. We start saying, this is not for me. I want something else. Yes. So now here you are. Talk to me, Jamie. Explain to the audience when some of those journeys that you began to veer off as you pulled away from the corporate side to now investigate this creative side, that creator, that deepness that is calling you, saying that things is not right. That voice, talk to us about that voice as you began to listen more to it, and some of those journeys that you went on from listening to that voice.
So it's interesting, because there's a section in my book about this. We don't always listen to the signals that our bodies are sending us, and our body is just the messenger for what's happening. And if we don't slow down and allow ourselves to be aware of what our body's trying to signal to us, for instance, you know, me having hip problems as a young person, then it starts to manifest into other things. So one of the journeys that I've gone on with exploring, both with myself and my clients, is how to determine what your signals are when your body is talking to you, and to just be aware of them and to give yourself space to check in with them. And one of the easiest ways to do that is, and they seem relatively random, but there are two things that are very related that are the best first steps when you're on that journey of increasing the awareness. But one is around breathing. And I know you mentioned meditation, and meditation can have lots of different forms. And breathing doesn't necessarily mean sitting and meditating, but really paying attention to the depth or the shallowness of your breath, and giving yourself reminders to slow it down and to breathe deeply. It's super important. And then the other is to understand how you're spending your time and the energy expenditures from that. So being able to reflect on everything that you've done in a day, and being able to decide, did that give me energy or did that take energy away from me? And when I'm starting my clients on this journey, those are the two things that I'm like, I want you to pay attention to these two things and then see what happens as you go. And as they go, they start to notice the signals that their body's giving them, and they're able to say, okay, I know I don't feel right, or I feel off, or this drained me. And then we can stop and explore why and see if there's a pattern there that needs to be addressed, if it's something that's getting in the way of them that are understanding themselves, or you know, accelerating on the path that they want to go on. But it's all about listening to the signals your body's giving you and making sure that you're exploring them as they happen. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, I didn't do that for a long time, which is why I got that to that dark place. Yeah. And now today I understand what some of my signals are. And it's so interesting to me that my hips are such a signal to me, but I still, when I get a little stretched thin and I'm doing a little bit too much, I'll wake up and I'll have an ache in my hips and I'll say, oh, I know that I'm doing too much and I need to practice something that's a little bit slower today, or I need to take myself, you know, out to lunch or get a massage or something to slow down. And I'm able to really use that as a signal, you know, is it red, green, or yellow? What's happening inside of me, and am I able to hear it?
Yeah, that is powerful. I love the imagery and the awareness that you're bringing the people to, because it is a place of, once you begin to make those decisions, it's amazing how we become slowly, we become more empowered in the type of decisions we make and the type of lifestyle that we begin to attain. One of the exercises that I used to do with my sons to show the power of the thought, the power of words, and how they manifest instantaneously in the body of the human spirit, is I would have one of them, the youngest one, usually I'd have the eldest and the youngest standing opposite in front of each other. I would have the eldest put his hand out and say things like, I am weak, I am weak, I am, you know, just negative things. And then I would have his little brother put his hand on his hand, and I would tell the eldest, but don't let him move your hand. But I want you to keep saying those negative words. I would write it out. And instantaneously, his little brother would touch him and his hand would drop to his side. And then I would had to change direction. I'll tell the youngest one to hold his hand out straight and just keep saying words of empowerment and all of these things. I'm strong and so forth. And his eldest brother, I would tell him, put his hand, move his hand. Couldn't move it. And I would tell them, that's how instantaneously that the energy transmits from your thought to your speech to your body. And it will manifest somehow, Jamie. And it goes, and it went to your hips. Some people, heart attacks, people, crippling diseases. Somehow that energy is going to be moved in your body. It manifests and it changes and causes your body to become the form weak and sicknesses and dis-ease or disease, as we name them. And so here you are, you're understanding that the process within your mind and your body, they're all related. And the space that you have found yourself, we talked about it before we got on, about stress. I want you to talk about this thing, because this thing is a monster within our society. And it is $1 billion industries. People are not going to, corporations don't want you to get out of it, because, but the pressure that they're to produce and all those other stuff will always be there. So now, how, teach the people about some of the tools that you use. You talked about recognizing it in the form of a pain in your body. Recognizing that mine was a pain in my chest. It manifested in my chest. And so it manifests. So talk to the people about some of these things, and how did you start to navigate through this monster that is going to sit there, and it is actually killing a lot of people. Educate us, give us some insight so that we will not be in the space that we are.
Yeah, so stress is such a tricky little monster, because it's not something that can be tangibly measured. And, you know, we go to see a doctor and they tell us that we need to lower our stress and, you know, take care of ourselves. And there's just no real way to do that without more context and understanding. So if you think about the stress response in your body, every time you experience a stress, a stressor, any, you know, a circumstance, something that happens, there's actual physical stress in your body. And when we address that stress, because we're cognitive, smart beings, we usually switch to the cognitive space. And so we go into problem solving mode, and we never really address what's happened in our body. So a good way to think about this is if you're driving a car and somebody pulls out in front of you abruptly, you know that feeling where your heart sinks, like maybe you're gripping the steering wheel a little bit tighter, but there's a physical response in your body and it takes a minute to come back down and it takes a minute for your heart rate to go back down. That's a great way to be like, okay, stress actually physically changes my body. It raises your heart rate. It starts to release cortisol. We know these things, but like that's a good way to think about it. Now think about, let's say Monday through Friday, you have a 30-minute commute each way to work. Let's say that experience happens every 5 minutes on your way to work and then every 5 minutes on your way home. It starts to compound when you're in a state of perpetual stress. So you're never going to reach a state of safety if every time a car pulls out, you're like, well, this happens a lot and it might pull out in front of me.
Yeah.
You're going to be in a state of defense. You're going to be on the ready to respond and react to it. So if you think about going to work and then maybe some of the stressors are an email notification or a phone call from your boss or whatever they are, and they're these little things that pile up throughout the day, your body is constantly feeling the stress of these things and you're just moving on to the next thing by solving the problem and never really coming back to your body and yourself. And there's a book called Burnout that does a really good job of explaining the physicality of stress and how you can return your body to a safe place. So there's two things that have to happen. You have to mentally go to a safe space, which is when we problem solve. And then physically, you have to bring your body to a safe place. And you can do those things. You can do that through movement, meditation, social interaction. There are these things that tell our body, okay, we're safe now. And then your body can go back to a restful place. And sometimes we do those things automatically, which is why we don't notice the stress as much. But if you're intentional about it, when something stressful happens, to return your body to a safe space, you don't accumulate as much stress debt inside of your body over time. So the example that you gave me just a few minutes ago about the exercise you did with your sons, the most powerful part about that for me was that you actually allowed them space to feel those negative things and to explore that before you brought them to the positive place. And that's what we don't do enough because it's uncomfortable. So like we go to the positive place because we know it feels good and we just want to get there. And then we don't actually sit with that negative feeling and explore it and think, okay, well, what's happening inside of my body? What am I feeling because of this? And what are my thoughts associated? And we separate the feelings and the thoughts and they're so connected. And so when these stressful situations happen, I encourage my clients to actually take a beat and sit down and write out their emotions, their feelings, and their thoughts. And, you know, the emotions are the physical response and the, you know, the anger that's generated really quickly or the fear that's generated really quickly. But then it usually there's some kind of overarching long-term feeling of, you know, feeling inadequate or just feeling that resources are scarce, or there's usually an overarching feeling that's driving that reactive emotion. And then there's all of these thoughts. And if they try to pare them down, like, you know, I don't feel adequate, I ask them why and try to get down to the core thought that's driving all of this response and emotion. And it's uncomfortable and it takes practice, but it's something that you can do that costs you absolutely nothing. And the more that you try to sit with it and process it, the more you notice it. And the more you notice, like, okay, my heart rate starts to go up, or I have one client that doesn't breathe when she's stressed. So she's sitting in a meeting and she's feeling uncomfortable. She stops breathing. And I'm actually a breath holder too. So I know exactly what she's talking about when she shares that. I have some clients whose signals are that they get really dehydrated because they start forgetting to drink water when they're stressed. Lots of interruptions with sleep. You know, then there's like some of the immediate things like sweaty palms or heart rate or that chest, that feeling in your chest, or that feeling that your stomach is sinking. These are all things that when they happen, we just step around them. And it's really important to sit with them and be like, why is this happening? And what is my body trying to tell me?
Yeah. And one of the lessons, because I remember running to my doctor and he, this chest pain for days. And I ran to my doctor, he's a good friend of mine. I'm like, I think I'm dying. And I needed to take a look at me. So he laid me down. He did the EKG test. And he comes back with my result and a textbook. And he showed me the textbook. He said, hey, take a look at this. And then he showed me mine. He says, get out of my office. He He said, "You're stressed." And then he looked at me and said, "Is work, talk to me about work." And then I started to talk to him about work. And he said, "That's where it is." But mine manifested as a tremendous amount of pain in my chest that I carried. And then until I began to learn how to take the steps that were necessary. One of the things you'd mentioned about the breath, mm-hmm. the breath to me is the bridge between the madness and the spiritual realm. Mm-hmm. It is the center of it as you begin to, it's where you cross over mm-hmm. and you must pay attention. Those that are aware understand the purpose of the breath. Mm-hmm. And it takes you, an athlete understands the purpose of a breath because it exchanges you from one space to the other. And you as individual, I implore you to learn about the breath technique to take you from one space to the other. Mm-hmm. It will change your life.
Absolutely.
Jamie, I want you to talk to us now about how did the book come about? How did now this new world that you have created, how did you start putting that together once you came out of work and they let you go? You started creating a new space, looking at your situation, going, okay, I need to create something else. I tell people that there are two sets of people. There are those dreamers and the ones that are the workers within people's dream. My pastor disturbed my life one day when he said, when I told him I was going to Disney World, and he told me that I was going, paying hundreds of dollars to go in someone else's dream. And I thought about it, and it kind of messed me up, and it changed my life, how I perceive things. And so talk to us about when you stopped producing and living in someone else's dream and started now putting some meat to the bone to create your sets of dreams.
Yeah, and it's funny because initially, cognitively, I was trying to solve the problem of stress that I was feeling, and I started going on job interviews. And I won't go into some of the stories from them, but I've got some funny stories from that period of time where my body was telling me, please don't do this. This is not what's right for us. And I finally threw my hands up and was like, I don't know what's next, but I know it's not this. So I'm just going to trust the process and I'll figure it out one step at a time. So I launched my marketing consultancy, which was an easy way for me to feel like I was adding value, which is a need of mine. I need to feel valued and to keep the lights on with my finances while I explored the rest. And I enjoyed doing it. I had boundaries with the setup. And then I really kept coming back to this idea of coaching. And I had a coach. I had been in several executive women in women's communities in the New York area that also had a lot of access to coaching. And I really liked that it was this partner to help you solve problems in a safe and creative and meaningful way. And so I continued to explore it, and I ended up going through a certification process. And then as I went, every corner that I turned, there was more validation that it was the right path for me. So I read this book called The Genius Habit that really helped me peel back the layers of where the intersection was between my unique value and my motivation and how to communicate that in a more thoughtful way. And then I was connected to the author, and she hired me and trained me on her method. So I started coaching people through her business. Then I launched my own coaching business, and I attracted clients who were going through things that I had been through. And it gave me so much purpose to feel like I was helping people each day. And so it continued to slow build. And then what I was seeing with my clients across the board, and I experienced this with myself, was after you go through a period of time where you're really invested in changing yourself and becoming a better version of yourself, there will be clashes with things around your life. So I started playing with this concept of your energetic environment, which is your relationship with the people closest to you, your home, your job, and yourself. And these are the things that are moving in an orbit around you at any given time that are either adding to your energy or pulling energy from you. And if you really explore them, you can find where the energy drains are. And there will be some things that might not fit in your life anymore. This is a painful part of the growth journey, is realizing that maybe something has served its course or something needs to be adjusted. And I found this over and over and over again, and I couldn't find a lot of resources about that integration of growth. So like, there's so many books on how to grow, how to add new tools to your toolkit, but maintaining that and integrating it isn't talked about as much. It's that next journey after the journey. So started exploring and decided that I wanted to try to write this book to help people. And I was told by some advisors in the book space that you're supposed to write the book that you need right now. And this was the book that I needed. So I set out, and I had already inadvertently been building a lot of methodologies to help serve my clients through this time that seemed to be working. So I was able to continue testing, and then connected to some really interesting people in the academic space that have helped me with my research. And there is no shortage of stories, both from people that I know directly and then other people that I've been introduced to, that support the journey that I'm trying to illustrate.
Yeah.
And I think this is a really timely book for the, you know, for the conversations that need to be had, because so many people have changed in the last couple of years from COVID, because we were all forced into a new normal. And forced change is when we transform. And there are a lot of people that are trying to figure out, well, what do I want my life to look like? And this is a, you know, this is a methodology that you can use for that. So it helps you explore where those energy drains are. And then if it's something that is important to keep, there's tools for how to recalibrate that relationship. If it's something that's just not going to serve you, you know, there's tools for how to exit a relationship gracefully. And I say exit, not end, because things are constantly changing, and maybe it's just not the right time for you to be with this person in that capacity, and that's okay. But you can come back to them later, maybe not. But it's a different mindset shift. And then the last, there's like three doors, and the last door is when it's something that you can't or you don't want to remove from your life, but it's not working the way it is. There's tools for how to shift your mindset so that it's an act of kindness instead of something that drains you. And there's so much research about what happens when we feel like we're doing something kind for someone else. And if it's something that will make you feel good by showing up in that way, it's a great way to clog that energy drain and to, you know, give a gift to this other person that might not have the same tools as you, and not have it detract from your day or your energy.
Wow. I love that. And I know your book is coming out in next year, May, I think it was that I read. So keep us abreast of that. Yeah. And I will send out the information to the Threads of Enlightenment family so that we can support you in that arena.
Thank you.
So I just thank you so much for coming by. Jamie, you have so much to say and so much to offer. And it was an honor and privilege to have you visit us here to help us to grow, to become better human spirits. I appreciate your knowledge, your wisdom, your insights, your direction that you have taken in your life and you have given to us. And I will make sure that the family come to you for the classes and all the other things that you're offering right now, the services that you're offering right now, the sponsorship, the group, all the different things, until your book comes out, where we can also send them to that. And it is an absolute honor. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. This was priceless, and I enjoyed your space and your sharing of who you are. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. It's my pleasure.
Everyone who's listening to this podcast, we hope to continually help you to learn how to embrace moments of darkness, because it is in the darkness that we learn how to develop and use our abilities to truly see those parts of ourselves, often invisible to us, in the light. It becomes your responsibility to navigate through all of your trials, to find out who you truly are and begin your journey to loving yourself, which is possibly one of the most difficult things you will ever do in your life. To love yourself and to find the real you. But always remember to enjoy the journey. Thank you for coming by. Please subscribe. And if you can support us financially, we deeply appreciate it.